T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first 3 orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Back on the Fan, Beningo and Roberts. We, of course, are live down here in Tampa, George M. Steinbrenner Field, with the Yankees for another day. And joining us right now, the general manager of the New York Yankees, and that, of course, is Brian Cashman. Brian, it's always a pleasure. How are you?
I'm all right. Good seeing you guys.
It's always a pleasure.
Thanks,
man,
for coming over to our camp.
Oh, we're honored to be here.
Absolutely.
We're trying not to get anybody hurt. We're trying to get out of here, man, alive.
We may cost you one guy. We've been here one day.
You know.
Giancarlo goes down.
Well, I guess giving you some content.
Yes. What's the, I guess, the confidence level that he'll be ready in short order? If it's not opening day — opening day is symbolic, is always the way I look at it. If he's back April 5th, that's still pretty good. Are you confident we'll see him relatively early on?
Well, it's a grade one strain, and so obviously we're in a situation right now where, you know, we've got almost the month of March. You know, the season opens a little earlier in the back of March right now, so you know, we have time to take care of it, but more importantly, we just got to get somehow that foundation correct so that, you know, there's no reoccurrence. He's had a number of different issues that have popped up that, you know, should be preventable, so we got to find that magic potion there to make sure as he moves forward, he can be in the best position possible, be Giancarlo Stanton, because when he's healthy — I mean, he didn't play, as you saw last year, he didn't play most of the year, and he comes back and he pounds a ball over the wall in the playoffs against Verlander.
Yep.
This guy is a force if we can, you know, get him to post. He's frustrated because he worked his tail off this winter, like he does all the time. He's a physical beast, but, you know, it's a complicated – you know, he's a big guy at the same time, and maybe that size is obviously something that, you know, we still got to, you know, collectively with him find a way to put him in the best position possible.
I was going to ask, because we saw him walk by before we knew he was hurt, and we look at him, we're like, what an Adonis. I mean, this guy's huge. He looks like The Rock. Is there something that you think he needs to do differently so to try to avoid these kinds of injuries?
Well, we got a new, obviously, performance team, you know, and their introduction with these players, for the most part, are happening, you know, just before spring training started. So a lot of stuff, you know, unfortunately, the way our sport is, these guys go off in the wintertime and they go here, there, and everywhere, and they're doing their things with their personal trainers, and you're staying connected. And I'm not saying anybody's doing anything wrong, but it becomes more of a challenge to manage, you know, that winter side of things. And so once the spring gets here and the physical assessments take place, and you might have some adjusted programs in the getting to know you. So our new performance team is really starting to build their relationships and get to know everybody. And unfortunately, here on the front end, we have an issue with G, so they'll get to know him a lot better now. And, you know, as we move forward, and, you know, hopefully unlock some things to put him in the best position possible, so these things become more limited rather than more, you know, consistent.
Severino goes down. Big, tough hit there, with no doubt about that. You know, we'll see. Who knows when we're going to see him? Probably sometime next year. What about that, Brian?
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, you know, between Sevy and Pax, that, you know, there's some things that transpired, obviously, towards the end of last season that you do comes into the doctor's orthopedic world where you're doing imaging and reacting to the player's pain complaints. And I remember in Sevy's case, for instance, we had to drag him out of the Dominican. He was like, "I'm fine. You guys are overreacting. It's my arm's fine. You know, next time I'm not going to tell you that I had a problem with my changeup." You know,
that's the last thing you want to hear.
Right.
Well, yeah, his fastballs and sliders were good. You know, when he started throwing his changeup is when he's like, "Hey, I just feel a little dull and achiness," and it was really nothing even close to the ligament. So when he came up, it was the equivalent of 2 baseballs away on your arm of where the ligament is. Hmm. So that's where, like, it hurts here, it hurts here. So, you know, you do the imaging and you do the physical testing, which didn't emit a positive response of a ligament issue. But ultimately, you know, again, it's you keep going through the car wash when they keep having a mild complaint, and this time it was a dye contrast MRI, and then the physical testing now emitted a positive response, and boom, we're dealing with the Tommy John. So he's young. We'll get him back. It's just, I mean, it is a tough blow because he's so talented. I mean, people forget how good he really is. But, you know, being a pitcher that throws really hard is something that obviously is part of that package, too.
I admit this is probably a very dumb question, but I always wonder this. Can you test everything? Like, when he says, I've got pain throwing a changeup here, and you mentioned it was away from where the injury was, is there a party that says, well, we want to test every part of your elbow, every part, just to make sure that everything's right? Because clearly, if there's some kind of pain, something's wrong. Can you do that?
Well, the way the MRIs work, as my understanding is you put markers down on the areas of complaint. So it's not like you throw your body image in. It's not like a body scan,
right,
of a full MRI. So all of a sudden, if you go in and your knee hurts, but all of a sudden, hey, you know, there's something I saw on your on your shoulder, because the markers down around your knee, and that's the laser focus of the imaging test on an MRI. So that, you know, the combination of the area of complaint, that's where they put the markers down, so you get the best specific image there, and then the broader out, it's more blurry or more, you know, not, or inconsequential, for instance. And so I guess my non-doctor's answer would be, as I understand it, is it becomes more difficult. That's why the physical, the ATC and the PT, the athletic training side, the physical therapy side, and the orthopedic side, they have these series of tests that if you have an issue with your arm or your shoulder, that they run you through and contort your arm, elbow, shoulder in a way that would emit a pain from your labrum, your rotator cuff, your ligament, et cetera. And then they fall back on the imaging. And that's why they were very confident he had a loose body in there. We were public about, and it was like, well, but they didn't think the loose body was causing it, because A, it didn't emit any pain, and B, it wasn't even close to the area. And so, you know, it's the one thing I've learned over the course of time, whether it's, and for our fan base, it's important for them to know, we involve. It's not just, you know, for instance, New York Presbyterian is our clearinghouse, without a doubt. They're doing a fantastic job for our athlete care, and yet they are in a network with the industry. So, you know, within Paxton's case, it started down in Texas with Dr. Meister, who's one of the better orthopedics in the country. Then it went back to our New York Presbyterian personnel. Then it went back to a Dr. Dossett. And so the network of sharing the information, seeing the player, including with Sevi, who has been seen now with HSS. He's having the surgery today at 5:30, and our New York Presbyterian. So you got the two behemoth hospitals right there in New York involved in trying to do the deep dive of what's ailing the player. And it goes by complaint, by imaging, by, you know, these physical testing side of it, protocols, and boom, you know, you come up with the best next plan of action, but it doesn't guarantee immediate success.
If you had found it in October, what would it have done, if anything, to the timetable? Would it have been a significant difference?
Might a little bit, but I, you know, the way this thing, it feels like this is bass backwards, because, you know, ass backwards would be, you know, you would operate off of, you know, if you found the imaging in October, you would have then done typically a conservative program. All right, rest, rehab, maybe PRP injections, then a throwing program,
right,
which that would have been 2 or 3 months, and then you might be back in this, and then you'd probably be back in the same spot. Versus this way, we did, you know, MRI in December. You know, obviously the mild complaint he had in October was so mild that he was preparing for his next start, did his bullpen, no issue.
Right.
He responded fine. And it was such a mild itty bitty complaint that it just dissipated within 48 hours. And again, nothing emitting from the physical testing or any of that nature. So boom, he's good. He goes home. He feels great. Has a mild complaint in December, doesn't want to deal with it, doesn't want to come out of the Dominican, says this is overreaction. We pull him in December, pull him back in January. So bottom line is, I think probably the first doctors never want to operate. They always want to go delay. I remember dealing with the Paxton stuff. I was like, this is going to be an operation. We're losing time. And even though I'm not a doctor, I was like, can we just fast forward and get this thing done. And all right. The orthopedic answers back for these specialists and stuff was, no, we have to check these boxes. Some of it, which is time consuming, some of it involves injections. How does he respond to the injections? But we are definitely not going into a surgery until these different, you know, protocols are checked off first. And I respect and understand and that, and we just want what's best for our players. But sometimes it just doesn't work out.
I'm glad you said that, by the way, because I think that's how most fans. I know I think the same thing. Oh, we need surgery. Let's just get it right now. Let's get it over with.
I mean, everybody realizes and remembers the Tanaka stuff. I remember being on the calls like, let's just get this thing done. You know what? And we'll get him back a year and a half from now. I don't want to be hanging by a thread and stuff. And the doctor's recommendation back then. It was involving, again, that network. Dr. Christopher Ahmad, who was a tremendous orthopedic out of New York Presbyterian. Then I think Dr. David Olchek was probably involved with HSS. Dr. Eletrage out in L.A. And all of them concluded, yes, he has a small partial tear in this particular case, but we recommend conservative treatment at this point right now based on where it is and how he's responding and the physical testing of it and not admitting an issue. And if that fails, then boom. But we don't recommend surgery. And they were insistent on it.
Right.
And everybody else, including myself, was like, this is going to be a surgery. And then it turns out, they were right. I mean, so it's a complicated thing that bottom line is, the crew of personnel that are actively involved on behalf of the second opinions with the Players Association and Major League Baseball and then our own medical personnel are just doing everything in their power to do right by our players so our players can do right by our fans. And it's just frustrating because it's complicated. The body is complicated.
Sure. Garrett Cole, you guys, again, showed you were the Yankees. You went out, and we talked about it. Well, the Yankees got to go get this guy. This is the guy. And you went out and did it.
Well, I got to thank the Steinbrenner family because, obviously, it's easy to go out and land the big fish when they give you the big bait to fish with.
Right,
and so, obviously – he came here because he wanted to be here, but he came here because, at the same time, it was the most money.
Sure,
And, I take comfort, you really feel horrific when you're way out of bounds of, if no one was even close to you. But, after we were all done, it was nice to hear that the competition was fierce at a $300 million level, at the very least. Mm-hmm. And so we did what we had to do. Hal Steinbrenner stepped up, and it was more than we expected. To be honest, it's hard to kind of predict these markets, and you don't know if you're at the time you're flying blind, but you're responding to what the agents are telling you, and then you have your limits. But some of the goalposts had to move a little bit more than we thought to get it done. But we got it done, and I know our fan base, our players, our staff, we're excited about the potential he's going to bring here. He's really a special talent.
And you've been after him for a while. I mean, you originally had him, and I don't know how many times it seems you tried to get this guy back, and it never worked out. Now finally it does.
Yeah, I called him the white whale out of the Moby Dick, we were just trying to continue to navigate and pursue and, became an obsession. And so, we drafted him, Damon Oppenheimer. I remember being in the draft room when we had the draft board up and we had Garrett Cole as a very difficult sign. Mm-hmm. But in terms of talent, he was, towards the top of our draft board. And so that's why he slipped. Everybody slipped all the way to the back of the first round. And he was staring us right in the face. And we knew it was going to be a tough sign. But we thought because he was a Yankee fan that it was possible. So we made the tough choice to make that selection. And didn't work out, he bet on himself, goes on to UCLA, and then becomes the overall first pick in the draft 3 years later. And then, Pittsburgh benefited from that because they were available to pop him and develop him. We tried to trade for him from Houston, but Houston did a deal with the Pirates. And to be honest, we felt that our offer was better.
Right.
What was your offer?
No,
can you reveal it now?
I can't say because it involves players that are still here.
Still on the team, right?
But at the end of the day, so at the end of the day, it just it is what it is. So, but I remember being frustrated because we thought our offer would have served them better. But at the end of the day, beauty's in the eye of the beholder.
Sure.
And he went on to Houston, and obviously, and to be honest, the way Houston impacted them with, again, the way their technology was, and I'm not talking about the cheating stuff. I'm talking about just Brett Strom is an amazing pitching coach.
Yeah, no kidding.
I think we all recognize as an industry Houston was advanced in terms of edutronic camera usage. We didn't have edutronic cameras in place like Houston did and the Repsoto machines and stuff like that, and then how to unlock the ability to use those technologies. So as Verlander parachutes in there from from Detroit, and as Cole parachutes in there from Pittsburgh in a trade, in both cases, those guys' game got upped by the benefits of the knowledge capture that they are ahead of the industry on.
Right.
So I don't know if we could have unlocked
and
taken to the next level those characters as they took those steps in Houston because we weren't there yet. I think we're, like a lot of people in the industry, have continue to learn and grow and adjust and try to use everything to our power. But I think they were cutting edge in a lot of different things, in some cases ahead of the rest of the industry.
Well, when he was available via trade, because we would talk about it all the time on the radio, the Yankees' pursuit of Gerrit Cole, and I looked at him and said, he's had a couple of good years. He was coming off a year with an ERA in the fours. He was a good pitcher. He wasn't a great pitcher yet. Did you see this in him? Now, you mentioned what the Astros were able to unlock, but this was 2 years ago. This was before these dominant years that he had. So as you're bidding on him from Pittsburgh, how did you view him? Did you view him as a guy who could be this of what he's become the last 2 years?
I mean, turning the clock back, I could tell you that our analytics and our pro scouting side saw all the characteristics that were there. But then were we in a position, I guess, in hindsight, I can't answer this other than to say I think it's a question of whether we were in a position to fully communicate with not the full arsenal of technology, or would we be in a position to communicate with them and unlock and find that next gear that he was able to find in Houston? Were we in that? Did we have the platforms in place at that point in time for Verlander and Cole? I think that would be a question that would be unanswered. I can't tell you that we could have maximized their talent as well as they did. I think we're in a position now to do so, and it's more of a, instead of a condemnation of our programs, as it's not that as much as a I'm throwing bouquets their way the cutting edge that they were already so far ahead of the industry on what they were doing, and so. It's just more of an acknowledgement that they were down the line on some things further than we were and the industry was. And so it served their players in much better than maybe we could have serviced them at that time.
Right.
Last year you have an unbelievable amount of injuries. I mean, just nobody saw this coming. And you go out, and again, it tells me all I need to know about you as a GM. You go out and you bring in guys like Mike Tauchman. You bring in guys like Gio Urshela. A year before you got a guy like Voit you brought in here, and look what happened. You still win over 100 games with all these big guys getting hurt. What did you see in some of these guys that you knew they had something?
Well, I mean, as you know, it takes a village, and the Steinbrenner family has allowed me to hire surround myself and us, therefore, with really smart people. So Mike Fishman, for instance, is our assistant GM, and David Grabner is our quantitative analysis head. We got Tim Nehring and Dan Geis and Matt Daly and Jim Hendry heading up the pro scouting side with all those personnel, and Matt Ferry is our director of baseball ops. So, I mean, there's a talent group, not including our player development side, headed up by Kevin Reese. So I'm dropping names for a reason, and I'm not dropping every name I should be dropping. But the bottom line is, the environment that we have here is that knock on my door, push an initiative, sell your position if you believe in something that exists that might benefit us. And in many cases, there are going to be names that I don't hear about or don't know about. It could be somebody buried in somebody else's system. I remember last spring, for instance, when Tauchman came up, we did it on an off day. I was walking around with my family up in Disney, and I was wrestling the whole time with this left-handed reliever deal for Tauchman, and it was a split camp, and I basically had to break the tie, I decided to make the move. At the end of I have to make the recommendations and stuff like
that. Right.
But people are pushing his name in front of me, and whether it's DJ LeMahieu, as we all know that story now, where I got guys suggesting and why it could work, even though at first blush it doesn't necessarily look like it's a need, and the value of the player and the talent, or Luke Voit, so there's so many things that go on behind the scenes with the horse trading and the discussions and that have benefited us and therefore me. So it's allowed me to have the freedom to navigate, to negotiate with the various teams with the ammunition of information that we have based on the personnel that are providing it.
We're talking to Brian Cashman. How close did you come to hiring Beltran as your manager a couple of years ago?
I'll be honest. We went through that interview process, and no one separated themselves other than Aaron Boone. I mean, we had a lot of amazing candidates, but the Boone interview was so distinct and special. It was, and then during the interview process, as it plays out, I'm not in a position to, you know, communicate with, you know, the 13 or 14 other people that are in the room doing their own personal evaluations. But in my mind, I was like, I couldn't wait to hear what everybody else is saying. Cause I remember on the Boone interview, I was like, if this is real, this is special.
Right.
And then I was like, well, even if, and once I got the feedback from everybody else, they're like, wow.
Right.
You know, he really connected and in every which way is someone that despite no experience was like, this is, you know, a gift from above, because, you know, unlike when we made the decision, or they made, you know, however the Joe Torre thing ultimately ended, you know, it threw in my lap. I remember the boss didn't want any part of, you know, picking the next manager in right. that scenario. It was like, you make the call. Tony Pena was interviewed. Girardi was interviewed. And
Tom Mattingly.
And Mattingly was interviewed. Yep. Mattingly was the odds-on favorite. And
sure.
He was getting all the expectation that he would be the hire. And I went into that interview expecting Girardi to be the guy. And he interviewed sure. the mm-hmm. process.
Right,
and
right,
he won
right.
the interview. And then he was a great manager for us for a long time. This interview process was different. I didn't go in with a
right.
favorite in the race or an expectation of this is the guy I think is going to get it. Let's see how it plays out. Boone was more of a recommendation by people I respect in the game. And so bottom line is no one else. The interview process was going to continue.
Right.
If it wasn't Boone, but Boone, it was really pencils down. And we actually had to do another interview, I think, after the Boone interview. Maybe two more interviews. But I had a hard time getting off.
Yeah, it looks,
what he did.
Looks great so
tremendous.
Far.
What a job.
Did you, over the last 2 years, ever, like, interrogate Carlos Beltran? Mm-hmm. Because we've all heard the rumors about what was going on in Houston. Well, maybe we didn't know specifically, obviously. But you had him in the building. Was there ever, tell me everything you know. Now you're on our side.
Yeah, I'll kind of walk through. First, Carlos is someone I really, you know, despite what's gone on here, he's a friend. I like Carlos a lot. His baseball knowledge is off the chart. And there's a lot of things in that managerial interview that I gave him. He earned his way to be in that room because of his presence, his leadership, his knowledge. So he didn't get a courtesy interview for that managerial
right.
job. He obviously didn't get the job, but he earned his right to be in that room. But to answer your question, whether it's Carlos Beltran, who was our special assistant this past year, Joe Espada, who used to be our third base coach. He's been the bench coach there the last 2 years. Brian McCann, whenever I would run into him because he was a former player of us, or anybody that had some sort of prior connection with us or I have a personal relationship with, and then I'd enough to have a conversation, which would be this. What the hell's going on down there? I know something's going on down there,
right.
you know, but I would never get back. Nothing down there. Anything else is going on anywhere. You know, it would be, right. it'd be like kind of like mm-hmm. washed over, not answered, avoided, but in a, you know, in a diplomatic real quick of there's nothing going on there. That's you know, nobody else has been
so
doing.
So you knew based on those.
You had an idea. Good idea.
No. Well, I think everybody thought in the game something was off,
right?
But no one had proof, and it's a
right.
huge difference between
right.
you know, suspicion and fact,
right?
And so, and we've had several conversations with baseball about it, and with specificity, and you know, they would go through their attempted deep dive and come back with, hey, we looked into it and couldn't verify anything.
They needed Fires. I mean, I look at
I mean, if Fires doesn't come public.
Yeah, it doesn't
right.
happen.
Nobody really knows.
No, and that's why he, you know, he should be celebrated because he stepped out and publicly, you know, stopped something that who knows how long was going to go on and continue or manifest itself in one way or the other. And so at the end of the day, you know, that's how it happened. But if you were anybody that had worked with me that had been there, you know, we had a player, Cameron Maben, like I would mm-hmm. hear, he played with those guys years ago. He's like, hey, you know, his commentary was no more than, from what I understand, not directly to me, but some of our personnel, which is, hey, watch these guys. You got to be buttoned up. They're really smart. They do everything they possibly can to find out what, you know, the signs are, blah, blah, blah. But it was just vague like that. It wasn't anything like they got a camera out in the center field. Or
that's interesting that's the approach that they had. They tell you – little bit, but nothing right. specific. Just
yeah. So, I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, and I'm using those names as, but those are real examples of real conversations
right,
that
right,
either
right.
some of our people had, or I personally had directly, but the people, you know, involved, and I don't know out of all those people who were involved in what way, shape, or form, some of which has joined their places after, you know, the 17 incident, you know, and so. It is what it is. MLB obviously has done everything they possibly can. And
have
and
they, though? Come on. Altuve wore a buzzer. I'm convinced of it.
You know,
that's just me, though.
At the end of it all, I mean, how much information? You know, I got. It's not my job to – I'm not an investigatory person in terms of – it's not my background and everything else. And so I do believe the commissioner when he says publicly and privately that he does not get to this point without, you know, granting immunity to get – people on the record and telling him exactly what it was, and otherwise, you know, how is he going to validate what Fire said? Everybody else, if they got something to lose, they're not going to participate. So, you know, I trust that, you know, and I, you know, and Rob Manfred doing the best he can in a very difficult circumstance, and you know, and then you have to move on. You have no choice. I mean, I can't live in the past. I mean, you know, what we potentially were denied, and others, you know, is what it is. It's, you know, it's in the rearview mirror. There's nothing I can do about it now, and so we have to focus on now, and there's a lot to focus on here right now, clearly.
Oh, yeah.
We have a great team, a lot of great potential, but we have a lot of pitfalls, obviously, we're currently dealing with right now, and we're going to do everything in our power like we've done in the past to just find a way and get past, you know, all these opponents that are, you know, certainly more than capable of representing the American League in a World Series situation in 2020.
Brian, it's always a pleasure, man.
Thank you, Brian.
Always great talking
Appreciate
to you.
Appreciate it.
Thanks again.
Thank
we'll
you.
Talk
Thank
to you
man.
As the year goes on.
All right, take care.
Brian Cashman. Benigno and Roberts, live here. Of course, we're in Tampa with the Yankees, George Steinbrenner Field. And we're coming back with a lot more after this.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.